Following are comments on Shakespeare's Titus Andronicus, Act 3. Rome affords no prey but me and mine. Martius and Quintus are led away. Titus pleads with the tribunes and beholds the ruined Lavinia. Aaron offers to save Titus's condemned sons if one of the free Andronici chops off his hand. Titus sacrifices his hand, but receives only Quintus and Martius's heads, along with his own severed hand. Titus vows revenge and orders Lucius to invade Rome with a Goth army. In Act 3, Scene 1, everyone ignores Titus's self-sacrifice of 4 decades, and the tribunes he implores have just left the scene, so he tells his, quote-unquote, sorrows to the stones instead, reasoning that at least they will not, quote-unquote, intercept, i.e. interfere with or cut short, his tale of woe. Act 3, Scene 1, Line 37. Lucius informs his father that he has been banished for trying to assist his brothers. Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 49 through 51. Titus's entire world has crashed, and Rome seems, quote-unquote, a wilderness of tigers, intent on devouring only him and his kin. Act 3, Scene 1, Line 54. As he says, quote-unquote, tigers must prey, and Rome affords no prey but me and mine. Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 55 through 56. We already pity Titus, but now, to top off his grief, he is shown his damaged daughter. Pity has its limits when a man insists on serving up puns such as the one Titus offers Lavinia. Quote unquote, what a cursed hand hath made thee handless in thy father's sight. Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 66 through 67. This may be Shakespeare's way of lightening the impact of the dreadful violence staged during the play, but perhaps that was unnecessary due to the wide tolerance of Elizabethan audiences for violent representations. Titus exclaims in his wretchedness, quote unquote, that which gives my soul the greatest spurn is dear Lavinia. Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 101 through 102. Titus's sacrifice of Tamora's son Alarbus, in the name of piety, now appears worthless since piety, pietas, is dead in Rome. In his misery, Titus turns his thoughts to how he and his family can destroy Tamora and any other guilty parties. As he says to Marcus, quote unquote, let us that have our tongues plot some device of further misery to make us wondered at in time to come. Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 133 through 135. Titus responds from unspeakable suffering, but soon there will be no more tears, only vengeance. For now, he's still processing his grief. On more than one occasion, as here with Titus, Shakespeare's portrait of a Roman man seems to include a paradoxical embrace of qualities which, strictly speaking, ought to be condemned as shockingly un-Roman. This is true of Mark Antony in Antony and Cleopatra, and equally true of Caius Martius in Coriolanus. Antony takes into his Roman self the experience of the Near East, while Martius turns traitor to the city he has come to resent bitterly. So too, Titus the upright Roman general jettisons his pious beliefs and devotes himself to the pursuit of vengeance by any means necessary. Soon enough, Aaron enters and offers to lend the Andronici a hand, or rather take one, in exchange for the freedom of Titus's 2 accused sons. Titus, who had already thought it appropriate to, quote-unquote, chop off one of the hands that had defended Rome, falls for this vicious ruse. Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 72 and 150 through 156 inclusive. In spite of all that's happened, he apparently still thinks that when a man has given his word, honor will bind him to keep it. Titus's behavior at this point sounds like the famous definition of insanity as doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Aaron's pitch to any of the Andronici is, quote unquote, chop off your hand and send it to the king. Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 153 through 154. If one of them does that, Titus's sons will be returned to him. As always, Aaron is the ultimate stage villain. In soliloquy, he glosses his current trick by saying, quote unquote, "Let fools do good and fair men call for grace. Aaron will have his soul black like his face." Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 203 through 204. Aaron's cynical, selfish perspective is that ethical codes exist only to get others to do what benefits you. We should note Aaron's racially aware usage of the binary black/fair in the passage cited just above, with the first term clearly indicating wickedness and depravity. At the same time, it seems that this character self-consciously wrangles such oppositions to his own liking. He embraces a racially fraught binary ordinarily wielded by so-called fair Romans, but he means to do as much damage to the Romans as he can, so long as he has life and breath. Aaron is at war with the self-image that a dwindling number of Roman pietists cultivate to shield themselves from their own badness and the unstable condition of late imperial Rome. Titus's rigidity in adhering to the ancient Roman honor and morality codes has opened a window for Aaron's excesses, and to the indulgence of that bad actor's own sadistic brand of individualism in the absence of solid Roman morality. A messenger soon undeceives Titus about Aaron's true intentions. Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 233 through 239 inclusive. The absurd spectacle of, quote-unquote, "thy two sons' heads, thy warlike hand, thy mangled daughter here," as Marcus describes the sight, now elicits not weeping but instead determination to plan the destruction of Tamora and the emperor. Quote unquote, "Why, I have not another tear to shed," says Titus. Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 253 through 254 and 265. This is a Senecan turning point. The old general has pivoted from grief to an icy desire for revenge, and he will not look back. He has mastered his passions and is ready for action. In the service of this revenge, Lucius is instructed to go to the Goths and raise an army. Act 3, Scene 1, Line 284. Titus, Marcus, and Lavinia continue the grotesque body parts motif by carting their dismembered kinsman's particulars off the stage. Quote unquote, "Come, brother, take a head, and in this hand the other I will bear." Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 278 through 279. Even Lavinia is asked to pitch in and carry the severed hand of Titus. Oh, handle not the theme to talk of hands. At the family dinner, Marcus triggers Titus by clumsily using the word hands and kills a fly. Titus is angry until he's told that the fly looks like the Moor, so the killing was revenge. Titus goes off with Lavinia to read quote-unquote, sad stories. Just when we thought the hand theme couldn't be more over the top, along comes Act 3, Scene 2, at least in the first folio of 1623, though not in the quarto edition Norton uses, with Titus and family seated at a banquet. Marcus clumsily blurts out against Titus for his violent language in Lavinia's presence, quote-unquote, "Fie, brother, fie, teach her not thus to lay such violent hands upon her tender life." Act 3, Scene 2, Lines 21 through 22. Titus responds with the immortal lines, quote unquote, "Oh, handle not the theme to talk of hands, lest we remember still that we have none." Act 3, Scene 2, Lines 29 through 30. Titus continues to think on revenge, connecting even Marcus's killing of a fly to this imperative. "The family is not yet so reduced," he says, quote unquote, "but that between us we can kill a fly that comes in likeness of a coal-black Moor." Act 3, Scene 2, Lines 76 through 77. Marcus thinks Titus is out of his mind, but that doesn't seem to be the case. It's just that by now his overflowing pain and grief have been transformed into a macabre sense of humor. Titus and Lavinia soon go off to read, quote unquote, sad stories chanced in the times of old. Act 3, Scene 2, Line 82. Titus doesn't know yet how informative those stories will turn out to be, but Ovid is about to provide some enlightenment about Lavinia's woes. Thanks for listening. This audio lecture was recorded on Wednesday, January 14th, 2026. The foregoing material is copyright 2026 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations, I have relied on the Norton Shakespeare 3rd edition, 4-volume genre-based format.